I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So Andy Murray's out, but Andy Murray, to my mind, is back. We've been saying that for a while, but it really felt like that tonight. He was in a dogfight, a four-set battle with Fernando Verdasco. He went tooth and nail against him, and it was like old times. It was just absolutely fantastic. This is David Law here alongside Catherine Whittaker on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. Catherine has been presenting since goodness knows when on telly. I think she left the hotel lobby that we're in at the moment about 14-15 hours ago, but here she is still just before midnight to talk to you on the Tennis Podcast. Catherine, how are you doing?
It's just so much to talk about, isn't there? Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. I'm a shell of a person, David. That's the real answer.
So this is what I look like some of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. I'm experiencing a touch of the David Laws, but still want to talk about, I don't quite feel like I've talked about tennis enough today, David. No. I want to do another half an hour of it.
Here we go, let's do it.
I found the right place.
Let's start with Andy Murray, because where else to start? There are a couple of matches still going on at the moment, but Murray dominates the landscape and the feel of the place today, because honestly, it did feel like old times today, didn't it? I know it's Fernando Verdasco's second win out of 15 against him, but it felt like a win for Murray to me. I don't know what you thought.
I don't think it feels like a win to Murray.
No.
It might feel like a win for... I know what you mean, but I think he's... I didn't go to his press conference, David, because we were on air. I don't know whether you did.
I did, whether you spoke
to him. But I think he'll be furious to have lost that, and I think that's a brilliant thing. Yeah. Was he furious?
I mean look, I'm sure he was. I think he was disappointed. He was actually very candid about that, you know, that as much as I think he felt encouraged, yes, he was right in it there, and he could have won today. I think if you put him 6 months on, if that was at the Australian Open and he doesn't have any setbacks between now and then, if he's able to play half a dozen tournaments, couple of rounds each or something, I think he wins that match.
Yeah, I think so too. Exactly. I think it was one of the first, if not the first. I mean, I think it's only the ninth match that Andy Murray has played this year. I think so. His first match back, as it were, that hasn't been dominated in terms of narrative by his injury or his comeback or his movement or, you know, items relating to Andy Murray troubles, as they were.
Yes.
You know, it was just a sort of classic Andy Murray match. He might not have been playing his best, but it was classic. It was a classic Andy Murray tennis match. And I think Fernando Verdasco did very, very well to hold his nerve, because for a lot of that match, his nerve was wavering. I mean, that's say he had the proper yips on his second serve, and Andy Murray knew it, was exploiting it, was playing mind games with him. He was practically sabering on the return for most of the first set and a half. I mean, he really was standing that far in, and it got in the head of Fernando Verdasco, and then he decided to back off a bit, and the double faults did relent from Verdasco, but then And that's to Verdasco's credit as well, that, you know, he somehow found a way to hold his nerve. And then that final game, 12 minutes, was it? 12
yeah,
and a half 12, minutes?
12 and a half minutes, three or four match points saved, was, multiple breakback points.
It was a classic Andy Murray match within a match. And, yeah, it had everything. I could watch that game back. I mean, I think even neutrals were willing... Andy Murray to break back there and to at least take it into a tie break to give us more of that.
You felt that battle. In the stadium for sure. The crowd were and it just built the tension even more for Verdasco, didn't it?
Yeah, it just feels like one of those days on Arthur Ashe today, doesn't it? Given what happened with Sloane Stephens and Kalinina beforehand, it just seemed like someone had set the stage and gone, okay, it's time for the US Open to catch fire now.
Today was a great advert for the fact that they only have two matches on Arthur Ashe now, because both of them were good, and yet you still didn't massively delay the evening session. They felt centre stage. They got the proper billing, didn't they? And it was just great. What a great ticket to have them. And I know it can backfire and it can go the other way, and people might end up feeling shortchanged with just two matches, but it was brilliant. There was a lot of angst out there today. A lot of arguments between Andy Murray and umpire and Andy Murray and even Verdasco disagreeing about when they went off the court for the heat rule. Andy Murray came back onto the court and said, basically, that nobody's keeping the rules here. You guys don't even know what the rules are. Fernando Verdasco, the heat rule, is not supposed to be talking to his coach. He is talking to somebody. Turns out, or at least Verdasco's version of events, is that he was talking to Marcos Baghdatis and his coach.
Yeah. Was it a case of mistaken identity? Fernando Verdasco's... Marcos Baghdatis being mistaken for Fernando Verdasco's coach. Either it's that or... How are they not, these guys, if they take a bathroom break, they're practically followed into the stall.
Yes.
So how, in a 10-minute heat rule break, can the same vigilance not be applied? It seems strange. One thing I noted from the press conference given by the USTA spokesperson yesterday that was put up to deliver the news about the brand new heat policy, one thing that was noted from it was that he said it is the players' responsibility to get themselves back onto court at the right time. So at that point, I made a mental note of the fact that, so hang on a second, there's no sort of chaperone type person whose responsibility it is to do that.
But and we had
surely
issues
they
today
must
with
be,
that.
Surely they must be monitored in some way.
Well, Cameron Norrie had his heat time out and he was accompanied by somebody and they ended up going to the press room for his time out because he said it's the coolest place with the air conditioning. And, I mean, it is a fridge, the media cafe, I'm telling you. But Cameron Norrie said he had somebody with him. He checked how long they'd been. It was sort of 9 minutes 15. Went back to the court and the chair umpire said, no, you've been 10 minutes 45. And he basically penalised him. So
I don't quite get this because it is a replica of the rule that's existed in women's tennis for some time. So just that's been working. Just do whatever they've been doing.
I mean, the blokes might. Well, I mean, I think Daniela mentioned it on your coverage. The women know what to do because they've been doing it for years.
Yeah,
whereas, Novak Djokovic is diving into the ice baths with his trunks on.
Can
the
USTA
he doesn't know what
not just go and talk to a WTA supervisor and say, can you give us your list of rules and so we can copy them?
Can you get your players to tell our players what happens in a 10-minute break?
I mean, it's great for us to have something so spicy to talk about. Yeah, yes. Andy Murray sat there on court spitting teeth. He came back from the heat break about 3 minutes early, didn't he, to play his mind games. And he sat there having a good old bitch about what Fernando Verdasco's up to in the locker room. Incidentally, about the fact that he came back to the court earlier, we had Jim Courier in our studio throughout that match giving some really fascinating insights. And as soon as they went off for the heat break, which I don't think it looked like Murray was particularly bothered about taking. I mean, he didn't protest too much, but I think had it been just up to him, he'd have passed.
He did say he'd been reading up on it beforehand and he decided he was going to take a cold shower, change his clothes and get back out. So he'd kind of planned it, but I know what you mean.
And then Marcos Baghdatis lookalike interfered with his plans. Jim Courier said, he thought it was really unlikely that Murray would take an ice bath because he thinks that wouldn't be good for the hip. He was speculating because he doesn't know the ins and outs of that hip injury, but he thought it probably wouldn't be good to cool the hip down. It probably needed to stay warm, and there's probably a big warm-up process involved with getting that hip ready to play. So he predicted that there probably wouldn't be any side-by-side naked ice baths for Andy Murray and Fernando Verdasco today.
Okay, well, seems like Jim was right, because they were getting on too well at that particular point. So Murray out. He was asked afterwards, do you have any doubts that you won't be able to make it back to the top of the game? And he said, well, of course I have doubts.
What's the top of the game? Number one? That's the top of the game.
I mean, I don't know. I think just to be a really relevant force again, I think, is the gist of it. And I think he does. He already said, I do have doubts because I just don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next week, etc.
He's nothing but doubts. There's more doubts than anything else. What does he have certainty about at the moment, other than that he wants to?
But I think he has more. He would have more confidence about his prospects after tonight.
Confidence,
is how I feel.
But no certainty.
No, of course not. I mentioned Norrie as well, Catherine. He went out in four sets, so British interest over in the singles after just 3 days. I mean, it's felt pretty dramatic, but crikey, we're not used to this.
It certainly felt pretty dramatic when Cameron Norrie and Andy Murray were locked in extraordinarily long, what turned out to be final games at exactly the same time. I mean, the score lines were identical. It was going deuce advantage, you know, swinging between match points and break back points.
Yeah.
It's no exaggeration to say simultaneously.
Yes.
I mean, it was extraordinary. It was as if their fates were tethered together. And in fact, their fates were seemingly.
They were. There was
together.
A moment where on Five Live I was commentating and I simultaneously said, Murray saves set match point. Norrie saves match point. British hopes in the singles are still alive. And that didn't last long, but there we are. So that's happened. Andy Murray's out. Means we won't get Andy Murray against Juan Martín Del Potro, but Del Potro today sounded like he was just awesome. He just absolutely destroyed his opponent. So,
he's brushing people aside, isn't he? And conservation of energy for him, I think, is a big deal early on, especially in these kind of conditions. I don't know, I just instinctively, there's probably no physiology behind this, but I instinctively feel like the big guys take it hard. You know, remember, was it 2 or 3 years ago, you had that day with all the retirements, really similar circumstances. And I remember John Isner really suffered and Milos Raonic really suffered. And I don't know, I just instinctively feel like the big guys take it hard. Although, having said that, he's from Argentina. And isn't it quite hot in Argentina?
It is quite hot in Argentina. But actually, if you think back to last year when he was winning Epics, now he may still have to win Epics to go deep here. But he needs to not get embroiled in too many epics against Dominic Thiem.
And he's now got Fernando Verdasco in the third round. I mean, having said all that, that feels like an epic maybe, doesn't it?
I think Del Potro could probably handle him.
Brush him aside.
With the power that he's hitting the ball with, I think he'll be all right, I would have thought. But we'll wait and see.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. You mentioned the first match of the day on Arthur Ashe, Sloane Stephens, was pushed to the limit by somebody I don't think I've ever seen play before, but boy, did we enjoy saying her name.
Annalena Kalinina.
I mean, that is just a song.
Annalena Kalinina from Kiev.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, she'd never even played a top 40 player before today, let alone beaten one. She only had one top 100 victory, and that wasn't at tour level. That was over Taylor Townsend. I mean, she's come from nowhere. It's her first Grand Slam main draw. She's 21, so she's not quite as young as you would expect for those kind of stats, but nonetheless, I mean, all the analysis I've heard is that she played a really smart tactical game against Sloane Stephens, that obviously really done her homework, and Sloane Stephens kind of reverted to being a little bit too defensive.
Yeah,
and
she was
counter-punching.
Crucially. I saw a bit of your coverage when Jim Courier was in your studio, and he just said, my goodness, she is knocking the cover off the ball, this young woman from Kiev.
Say her name, David.
Annalena Kalinina.
Yeah.
Awesome. I don't really fancy commentating at a million miles an hour on that one particularly, but anyway, it was a 4-6... 7-5, 6-2 for Stevens. But again, big win for her.
It didn't feel like a 6-2 final set either, did it? It was more competitive and nail-biting than that. This feels really big for Sloane Stephens for me. I think perhaps unfairly, especially given, you know, her recent battles with Simona Halep this year. There are other examples too, but those are the ones that spring to mind. I think, I personally am, and I'm sure I'm not alone, are guilty of thinking of Stephens in terms of in quite a binary way. She's either on or she's not. It's either seamless and amazing and overpowering and brilliant, or it's just not her day and it can be a bit of a horror show. We don't really necessarily think of her as winning ugly and gritting her teeth. Now, obviously, she can do that, but... it's not necessarily the first thing that has always sprung to my mind. So for that reason, this feels huge. The kind of... it wasn't ugly today, so winning ugly is unfair, but it was not her best day. I mean,
but she fought hard.
She fought so hard. She wanted it so, so much. And as I say, we can often think of Sloane as sometimes seeming as if she can take it or leave it a bit. Mm. Well, there's no questioning whether she has that attitude towards certainly this tournament, and I would hope, you know, tennis in general. I'm not saying there aren't going to be off weeks and performances where it looks like she can take it or leave it. She's always going to be slightly that kind of player, but there's definitely a step up in intensity and maturity for me as somebody that picked Simona Halep pre-tournament, I'm entitled to a second pick, not in official Tennis Podcast Predictions League terms, but in spirit, I'm entitled to a second pick. And after today, I might just go for Sloane Stephens.
Okay. Well, I've got a Yulia Gerges-sized hole in my quarterfinal lineup at the moment because she's lost to Ekaterina Makarova today. But anyway, enough of that. Talking of amazing American players on Arthur Ashe Stadium court today, Serena Williams has just won through 6-2, 6-2 against Corina Witthoff.
I just watched that while you were on the bus, David.
Did
getting
you?
Lost on the bus.
Oh, I did get lost on the bus. You're right. And Serena, I mean, we're not exactly fashion correspondents here on the Tennis Podcast, but I do feel like... Just a brief word on the Serena dress today, because I don't think I've ever seen quite anything like what she was wearing on a tennis court before.
Really?
It was very dramatic, I thought.
I find it... I mean... Yeah, really? What, because it was a 2-2?
Yes.
I found the sort of sock shoe bit a bit weird. But the rest of it, I'm not offended by it. It's fine.
Maybe the view from the commentary box.
Of all the
top.
Things that, you know, people have... What, into, if you're putting, like, Zverev in knee-high socks at the top of the scale, if you're calling that a 10, I would call Serena's outfit a 4.
In terms of drama?
In terms of drama,
statement.
Yeah.
Okay. But you kind of liked it, even so.
I'm not going to be dishing out $900 for one anytime soon. I like that she does her own thing.
Okay, fine. Now you can see why we don't get into the fashion here on the Tennis Podcast.
I like that she doesn't give a damn what the Tennis Podcast thinks of what she's wearing.
So do I. Anyway, her tennis is pretty good. 6-2, 6-2.
I'm sure against she's tuning in nonetheless.
Karina Wirtoff. Hi, Serena.
She was really good. She was better than in the first round.
She's going to play against Venus now.
Yeah, that's a toughie, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I didn't watch Venus's win today over Camilla Giorgi, but straight sets over Giorgi in tough conditions. A woman that, you know, suffers from a condition, Sjögren syndrome, that, you know, already hampers her in terms of, you know, dealing with lethargy and fatigue and joint pain and all of the things that I'd imagine could be easily exacerbated by these sorts of conditions. So, I mean, yeah, she's incredible. And she spoke really well on the court. Her face kind of lit up when she talked about playing Serena, and she referenced the last time they met at the Australian Open final last year. I had to actually double check that was last year, because so much has happened. I mean, Serena's baby isn't even 1 year old yet. And she said Serena, you know, she was 2-1 that day, is what Venus had to say about that match. So it should be more of a fair fight this time.
Matches. Have you ever been to a match between Serena and Venus here at the US Open?
I haven't, no.
Because I've been here, I was just looking at the head-to-head, I've been here for 3 of them. And I remember 2008, I don't remember an atmosphere at the US Open like watching Serena against Venus. It's so much bigger than a tennis match here. It's what the locals want above all else. I think they'd love to have a Federer-Nadal match one day. But there's nothing like Serena against Venus. It's like the whole country seems to stop. It's this just big event. And everybody dresses up to come to it. You know, it feels like one of those, like people are going to some sort of massive Oscars ceremony or film premiere or something. It's just a really... It's a big night out.
What should I wear? I'm really nervous.
Whatever you have to wear on the telly. I don't really know.
All right, I'll keep my false eyelashes on then.
Right, okay. I'll have mine on too.
It's definitely going to be a night session, isn't it?
Yes, it is. A couple of days' time. But what will it be? Friday night.
Hot. I mean, it's the ESPN are rubbing their hands together. It's the absolute dream. I mean, I after watching the documentary that Serena did, not the most recent one being Serena, the one before that about the year when she was chasing the calendar year slam, I was as much struck by Venus as I was by Serena in that how, because they played that year at Wimbledon, didn't they? And so the documentary really, really covered in depth that and just the protectiveness of Venus over Serena as an older sister, and how fantastically difficult she in particular finds those matches. And
this will be their 30th.
Their embrace is at the net, and what Venus, you know, sort of whispers in her sister's ear, you know, it's okay. I think that's what she said at Wimbledon, wasn't it? She said, you know, it's okay.
And it must be so hard to do.
And there are plenty of things in sport that we find, you know, unrelatable in quite an abstract way. We'll never hit a forehand like Roger Federer, anything even close to Roger Federer. But there is literally, I think, and I don't know if you can think of one. There is literally nobody else on the planet that can get anywhere even close to empathising or relating to what they experience when they play one another, I don't think. Nothing even close. Can you imagine having something like that? It must be lonely. I guess they've got one another in it, but I can't fathom it.
The Brownlee brothers in the triathlon, but the difference is they're against a whole field. It's so isolated, isn't it? You're on a tennis court. There's only you two on that blue bit of the tennis court. There's a net between you, and you're basically trying to ruin each other's day.
Something about, you're right, that's a really, really good example. But something about that one-to-one, head-to-head battle, you're each standing on the baseline and you're looking at one another in the eye. I mean, can you imagine doing that with your sister? I'd like to ace my brother a few times, but I wouldn't want to deny him Grand Slam glory.
I think I could take my sister out. I think that's a win for me, personally. Anyway, I hope she's not hearing that. Oh, hello. Yeah, somebody else is in the hotel.
That's not for us.
Very excited. They want to be on the tennis podcast. They don't even know what it is.
But they're on the tennis podcast.
Denis Shapovalov came back from 2-1 down to win in 5.
Just watched it. He did really well. Really well.
Wasn't it like 7-6 in the fifth or something?
It was 6-4 in the fifth. 6-4 in the fifth over Andrés Seppi.
Yes, Andrés Seppi.
And he plays somebody. He plays Isner next.
Oh my goodness!
No, he doesn't. He plays Kevin Anderson next. Sorry, not that tall big servers are interchangeable.
Tall people generally are great, as far as I'm concerned.
He plays Kevin Anderson next, and I was about to make an unsolicited prediction there, but I'm just not gonna. I don't know. 5 sets.
I think Anderson will win. He's too experienced. He is. I tell you what.
Is Kevin Anderson going to win the U.S. Open?
Kevin Anderson is a winning machine. For a player who is somewhat limited as a tennis player. I mean, he's a big guy, big serve, big forehand, but he is a limited tennis player relative to some of the other top players
of
the game. He is just knocking it out of the park in terms of producing and reaching his potential. You know, Wimbledon final, US Open final last year, part of the conversation here, coming back and beating Ryan Harrison while cramping. I mean, it's impressive.
Marty Fish just said on ESPN commentary that he thinks John Isner can win the Open. Discuss.
I think he gets involved in too many epics.
Well, he did one today.
Yeah,
5 sets.
I do. I mean, I like Marty. I respect him. And he may be right, I may be wrong, but I think that's a bit of a hometown call. I think the American players, they love their compatriots and their friends, and I respect them for it, and I understand it. But I think that is not going to happen, personally. Who's he got next? Let's see. We've got Wawrinka against Raonic next. Wawrinka got a win. And
Wawrinka
so
got a really good win in, I think it was straight sets or 4 sets, was it?
Against Humbert of
Hugo Humbert.
And John Isner will play against Dusan Lajovic, who beat Cameron Norrie. I would think Isner would win that. Look, he might go deep, but I think he will probably run into somebody who will take him out. I think in that half of the draw, Del Potro is more likely to knock him out if they get to that point. But anyway, we will see it all unfold as it goes along. But I think that's a great win for Shapovalov to have won in 5. But I would have thought Anderson would have beaten him.
Yes, it's a pass loss today in the grudge match against Medvedev.
Yes.
Bit of a disappointing one, I think. 4 sets.
I think he struggled in that those temperatures.
He
also
messed up
the heat rule. He didn't take it because he didn't know he got it.
And Medvedev didn't want it.
Really?
No, I presume so. Because if one of them wants it, they have to take it.
They'd have had to take it.
So they didn't take it. So hang on, is it not incumbent on the umpire to make it clear?
Well, I think that this is another one of the teething problems
it's not going
that
well,
are
is it?
Being endured. Dominic Thiem won in 5, coming back from 2-1 down.
Just now, there's a name. If we mentioned his name, I mean, he's just not in the conversation,
just
is
don't,
he?
Don't
Amazing.
Expect him really to...
But he ought to be. Come on, Dominic.
I can't see it.
No, I can't either. I'm not saying I mean,
Sloane Stephens against Victoria Azarenka next.
Oh. And I tell you what, Victoria Azarenka was good. She dismissed Daria Gavrilova, kept on waiting for the fight back, you know, because that's what Gavrilova does. She just doesn't go away. She bobs around, her ponytail bouncing around behind her, you know, doesn't go away, runs and runs and runs. And she was just being so aggressive, Azarenka, really hitting the sweet spot. And I think she's still going to lose to Sloane Stephens.
Do you? Okay. Well, just before we very briefly have a look at the order of play, I'll tell you, we've got Nadal, who's about to go set up, it looks like, against Vasek Pospisil. I'll come on if he ends up losing, but it doesn't look like he will.
He ain't gonna.
No, it's not going to happen. This story has grown with Elise Cornet, hasn't it, today? And first, the USTA have released their statement in which they have admitted their umpire got it wrong, and the rule... It was quite interesting because they were trying to hide behind the fact that the warning was given because Elise Cornet changed her shirt while not sitting in her chair. But they also said that we've clarified the rule and effectively changed it so that it can't happen again. So which bit have they changed? But anyway, then the WTA came out very strongly and said that this was really not right, that she should not have been warned, and that she did nothing wrong. And they were really quite critical of the USTA.
Yeah, and interesting, the order of release of those statements. You know, you'd have think the WTA would have released their one first, and sort of the USTA changing policy would have been a follow-up to that. It kind of felt like, I mean, I didn't disagree with anything in the WTA statement. I thought it was bang on, but I thought it was kind of hammering a nail into the coffin, given the USTA had already said we got this wrong and we're going to change things from now on. But very, very, very startling revelation from Daniela Hantikova in our studio off the back of discussion of this, and she actually said before those statements came out she knew the rule was that you could do so in your chair, because she said one of her sponsors when she was younger offered her a deal to deliberately change her top at every change of sets. She refused the deal, but she was offered a pay deal to do that. And I mean, it's utterly startling, isn't it? I mean, and that's, you know, it would be surprising if that was occurring in a vacuum and a one-off incident. I'm pretty speechless about it. Really, pretty speechless about that as a revelation.
Associations are getting a lot punchier at the moment, in particular with all their statements, and I think it's an example of I think lines are being drawn, teeth are sharpening, and people are really making their presence felt in the associations at the moment.
Yeah, well, tennis is kind of in battle, isn't it? Tennis is at war, seems a slight exaggeration, but you know, some kind of strong language applies here.
There's a lot of tension out there.
More than tension, really.
A lot of manoeuvring.
So, yeah, manoeuvring, lines in sand being drawn, battle, you know, it's turf war. I mean, you know, we're relative tennis insiders, and yet I still think there's probably layers upon layers upon layers of politics that we have no idea are even going on,
yes.
David.
No, I think you're probably right.
And it's probably best for us be in the dark about it, because I'm sure there's some unpalatable stuff.
Yes.
And ignorance is sometimes bliss.
It is. So let's talk about the order of play tomorrow quickly. It starts with Angelique Kerber against Johanna Larsson on Arthur Ashe Stadium court at 12. Then Roger Federer in the day session. Roger Federer in the day session against Benoit Paire.
If he's not on, he's going to get exposed a bit there. He's talking up a good game about how Cincinnati final wasn't a big deal because conditions were so different in Cincinnati, a lot quicker, didn't feel he had the time to properly control his forehand. If that's a bluff, then Benoit Paire can expose him a bit. I'm not necessarily saying beat him, but we'll know more than we know after seeing the Nishioka match.
He's more vulnerable in the day sessions.
Without question,
Novak Djokovic then against Tennis Sangren in the evening session at 7. Then the ultimate night session player, Maria Sharapova, who's 21-0, apparently, in the night. She's up against Sorana Kostea. On the Louis Armstrong court, Petra Kvitova against Wang. Alexander Zverev follows him against Nicola Mahu. I can't really see Mahu hurting Zverev, to be honest.
I saw Lendl on the practice court with Zverev earlier, David. He had that look in his eye.
He fancies it.
The Lendl look, yeah.
Oh, dear. Keys after that. And in the evening session, Gael Monfils against Kei Nishikori. Oh, I want to go and watch that.
Yeah, second round.
That's good.
Absurd, isn't it?
Then Caroline Wozniacki. Any other little gems to pick out? Nick Kyrgios against
Sabalenka,
Herbert.
David, against Zvonareva.
Oh, that's going to be very loud and tasty. Over on court number 13. First up is that match. And I did just see one when I was flicking past just now. Just a quick word.
Who does Nick Kyrgios play?
He's up against
Pierre-Hugues Hébert. Yeah.
Yes. So, Kyrgios, who is making his presence felt on social media and arguing with lots of people at the moment.
Yeah, I'm surprised, given that he deleted that controversial tweet in relation to Stefanos Tsitsipas. I'm surprised he's going down that road again.
It's Nick Kyrgios. He changes his mind every 5-10 minutes.
Oh, I find it difficult, though, because I can't laugh this off, because I find it's, you know, I like Nick Kyrgios. I do probably forgive him too much, because I just sort of fundamentally feel like he is a good egg. But
being a bit silly about this, though, isn't he?
I think silly is too dismissive. I mean, is it not borderline bullying?
I'd say it's piss taking. He's teasing. And it's just a bit, you know.
In a public forum.
Leave the bloke alone.
In a public forum where your mates are piling in.
I mean, leave Tsitsipas alone. Come on now. He's all right.
If he wasn't all right, I don't know. It leaves a bitter taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I would. There's a bit of me that does want to say to him, just back off, right?
Yeah. And aside from anything else, like, he's not a 18-year-old kid anymore. Like, sort of playground stuff. Like, it's like all the on-court stuff. Like, yeah, you're cool, and you know, I enjoy a bit of it. But is it going to be cool when you're 30 and still an underachiever? Is this stuff cool?
Is he going to beat Herbert?
Yeah, he's going to beat Herbert. One of his limbs falls off, you know, like it can
Let's
do every now
doesn't.
And then. But
Kyrgios Federer would be quite nice for round three, please. Just a word on Eugenie Bouchard, who came through qualifying here, is actually playing pretty well, so it'll be interesting to see whether she can keep it up. Alex Dibonor against Francis Tiafoe. That is a tasty match that I would quite like to see as well. That's about it, Catherine. It's time for bed, I think. It's time for you to go and rest up.
The magic words.
Yes, because it's... sleep is like extended naps, Catherine, which is just your dreamland. So Catherine will be back on Amazon Prime Video UK presenting their coverage brilliantly, I should add, because she's been superb so far. And she will be doing that from 10:30 local time, 3:30 in the UK tomorrow with a pre-game show, and then they're live after that. I will be on BBC Radio in the afternoon. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Amazon Prime. We are executive produced by Melanie Bowes, by Triple S, tennisballs.com, Charlie the Ferret is our mascot, Le Manga Club is our sponsor, and it's bedtime. Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.